Namarupani
Vishamani
Sameshvapi Datu Shudha Vakalpyanta Itesham Svarta Siddhaye Vedana. By Vedic literature, Nama, names, Rupani, and forms, Vishamani, different, Sameshu, which are equal, Api, indeed, Dhatushu, in material bodies composed of the five elements, Udhava, my dear Udhava, Kalpyante, are conceived of, Etesham, of them, the living entities, Svaarta, of self-interest, Siddhaye, for the achievement. Translation, my dear Udhava, although all material bodies are composed of the same five elements and are thus equal, the Vedic literatures conceive of different names and forms in relation to such bodies so that the living entities may achieve their goal of life. Purport. The words Nama Rupani Vishamani refer to the system of Varnashram Dharma in which members of human society are designated according to four social and four occupational divisions. Those dedicated to intellectual or religious perfection are called Brahmanas. Those dedicated to political perfection are called Kshatriyas. Those dedicated to financial perfection are called Vaishyas, and those dedicated in eating, sleeping, sex, and honest work are called Shudras. Such propensities arise from the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, because the pure soul is not materially intellectual, ambitious for power, enterprising, or servile. Rather, the pure soul is always absorbed in loving devotion to the Supreme Lord. If the various propensities of a conditioned soul are not engaged in the Varnashram system, they will certainly be misused, and thus that person will fall down from the standard of human life. The Vedic system is designed by the Lord so that conditioned souls may pursue their individual achievements and at the same time advance toward the ultimate goal of life, Krishna consciousness. Just as a doctor deals with a crazy man by speaking to him sympathetically in terms of his false conception of life, one who understands the Vedic literature engages the living entity according to their illusory identification with the elements of matter. Although all material bodies are composed of the same material elements and are thus qualitatively identical, as described here by the word Sameshu, the Vedic social system Varnashram is created to engage all human beings in Krishna consciousness according to their various degrees of material identification. The absolute good is the Supreme Lord himself, and that which approaches the Supreme Lord becomes similarly good, because the sun is the source of heat within this world. An object that approaches the sun becomes hotter and hotter until it merges into fire. In the same manner, as we approach the transcendental nature of the personality of Godhead, we automatically become surcharged with absolute goodness. Although this knowledge is the real basis of the Vedic literature, mundane piety is enjoined and sin is prohibited, so that one can gradually come to the platform of material goodness, whereupon spiritual knowledge becomes visible. I think it's better not to give water with tulsi leaves in it. For the speaker, well, I have to chew them in order to be able to swallow. Otherwise, it gets stuck in your throat. It's hard to speak. Or if you have to chew them, it takes time also. Can someone change it? What? This has very little tulsi in it. There's a whole lot of tulsi in there. Vedena Namarupani Vishvamani Sameshvapi Datu Sudhava Kalpyanta Etesham Svarta Siddhaya. my dear Uddhava, although all material bodies are composed of the same five elements, and in the sequel, the Vedic literature conceive of different names and forms in relation to such bodies, so that the living entity may achieve their goal of life. So the composition of the bodies are of the same elements, but the, you know, balance, we can say, of those elements is different in different bodies, just as the Ayurvedic science analyzes Kapha, Pitta, Vayu, right? They have these three major elements, Kapha, Pitta, Vayu. What's that? Kapha, Pitta, Vayu. So some persons, you know, they're more Kapha, Pitta, Vata, right? Some persons are more Kapha, some persons are more Vata. There are different mixes of them. So different types of bodies, and maybe some bodies may be more susceptible to certain diseases than others. And the Ayurvedic science attempts to balance these. Okay. Hare Krishna. So the Ayurvedic science attempts to balance these different doshas, as they're called, no? And so like that also, persons have different natures. You know, someone may be inclined to intellectual activity. Brahmanas are dedicated to intellectual or religious perfection, is mentioned here. So in Vedic society, of course, a lot of stress on encouraging persons to strive for religious perfection, to become learned in religious topics, and to teach that widely in society, so that the society would be very God-conscious and God-fearing, obedient to the laws of God, so that the members of society would strive to advance in spiritual life and thus eventually go back to Godhead. So there's an overall goal in Vedic society. Overall goal is to go back to Godhead, or to attain love for Krishna. That's to attain love for Krishna. That's actually the highest goal. There is a discussion recorded in Chaitanya Charitamrita between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Acharya of the Tattvavadi Sampradaya. That is the Madhava Sampradaya in Udupi, when Mahaprabhu went to Udupi. So, of course, that's our Sampradaya. To some extent, we can say it's our Sampradaya. Our Sampradaya is also called Madhava, Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Sampradaya. But since the time of Madhavendra Puri and Lord Chaitanya, there's a flavor of ecstatic love of Krishna in separation, which becomes quite predominant or important in the teachings of our Sampradaya. So there's some, and of course the inauguration of the Sankirtan movement by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the most significant. We can say change or addition. I mean, it's not exactly addition, but it seems like addition when you compare it to the standard, you know, Madhava teachings. They don't give that stress on Harinam Sankirtan. Certainly they chant the names of the Lord, but it tends to be more formal, more ritualistic, their whole sampradaya. But anyway, the discussion was going on between Mahaprabhu and this Acharya. And Mahaprabhu, he took the position of a student, inquiring from that Acharya, that how does one attain perfection of life? You know, what is the goal of life and how does one attain it? So he said the goal of life is to attain liberation. By that he didn't mean Brahman realized liberation, but he meant liberation to the, well, there are five kinds of liberation, but that Brahman liberation is only one of them. There are other four kinds to, you know, to go to the same planet as the Lord, to have the same bodily features as the Lord, to become an associate of the Lord, to have the same opulence as the Lord. Is it? To live on the same planet, to be an associate, to have the same opulences. And? Same form. Mm-hmm. So these are the four. So that, you know, that is means to go back to Godhead, back to the at least Vaikuntha planets, and they see that as a goal of life. And he said the means to attain is following a varnashram dharma. If everyone performs his duty properly within society, then and offers the fruits to the Lord, then hopefully one can eventually go to the spiritual world. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that's all right, he said, but actually he said the real goal of life is to attain Krishna prema, love of Krishna, and the means to attain is by bhakti yoga, by devotional service. So their, you know, their teaching is a bit more, you can say, self-motivated. And if persons are working in varnashram dharma, you know, they may have a fruitive mentality, and then they're offering the fruits or some of the fruits to the Lord. So the, you know, this purification and the desires to go back to the spiritual world. So there's an element of selfishness in the desire, we can say, that I want to go to the spiritual world. So Mahaprabhu was taking it to another level. It's not wrong, you know, what they're teaching. We also teach that. We talk about, you know, we should try to go back to Godhead, we should perform our prescribed duties, etc. Those, you know, obviously their teaching is based on the Bhagavad Gita, but just the stress is a bit different. The stress of our sampradaya is to develop unalloyed love for Krishna, to fully surrender to Krishna, to do whatever is required by Krishna or Krishna's representatives. That whether we go back to Godhead or not, that is really up to Krishna. The devotees can remain in the material world if Krishna wants. He's ready to remain. Just as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, you know, I don't mind, I have to take birth even as an insect, but please let it be in the house of a devotee. He just aspired for the devotee association. So of course that's a prayer of great humility. Generally that's not the prayer that the devotees should be making. but at the same time, they shouldn't always be just demanding of the Lord, you know, take me to the spiritual world, take me to the spiritual world. The devotee's mentality should be, you know, whatever the Lord desires, let me serve him to the best of my ability. And with devotion. Varnashram is a structure for society, but higher than just performing one's duty is actually to develop the mood of devotion when performing one's activities, so that would be pleasing to Krishna. So in this way Mahaprabhu was explaining what is the actual goal of life and how to attain it. But in order to rise to that platform, it would be advisable in any case to live within the structure of Varnashram Dharma and to strive to at least come to the mode of goodness. So therefore, you know, all the different kinds of rules and regulations for pious life that we find in the Vedic literatures, they have their value in Krishna consciousness also. But there shouldn't be too much stress on that. And if there is too much stress just on Varnashram Dharma and on, you know, performing all sorts of pious rituals to create atmosphere of mode of goodness, that can cause one to be forgetful of Krishna also. And too much stress is then placed on pleasing the demigods, on getting different benefits from them, and the tendency is just to act on the material platform in the mode of goodness, which generates good karma. Well, that's, you know, that is considered a more favorable position to be in for taking to Krishna consciousness than simply a sinful life, which creates a lot of bad karma. But it's not always guaranteed. The person who's in the mode of goodness may become overly attached to that. He may not take up the process of devotional service. Whereas a person who is sinful due to suffering, he may become inspired to take to Krishna consciousness. So it is hard to predict, you know, where bhakti will sprout, what causes bhakti to take hold in the heart of one person and not of another person. Bhakti in that sense is independent. You know, bhakti cannot be just controlled by any kind of formulas or, you know, particular material arrangements. It is the causeless mercy of the Lord that someone takes to bhakti. Bhakti, the knowledge of bhakti may be distributed to all. Many persons come in contact with devotees, get books, take prasadam. Some of them take to Krishna consciousness and some of them don't. Some of them may seem to be more pious, more in the mode of goodness, and it's generally they have a better chance to take the bhakti, but still it's not guaranteed, and bhakti may take root in the heart of someone who seemed to be a sinful person. Although it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, yesham tvanta gata papam jananam punya karmanam te dvanva mohaniya mukta bhajanti mam vridavataha. Persons who have acted piously in this life and previous lives and whose sinful reactions are eradicated take to my service with determination. So a devotee once asked Srila Prabhupada, you know, how come that we have been able to take to devotional service because we don't have any, you know, background of pious activities? And Prabhupada said, I have created your pious activities. So, actually, the process of Harinam Sankirtan is so powerful. The mercy of Lord Chaitanya is so powerful. The mercy of the great acharyas like Srila Prabhupada is so powerful that even if a person hasn't been pious, his life may be transformed. No? By the potency of their teaching, by the potency of the process. So that, therefore it's said that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, he just freely distributed Krishna consciousness. He broke open the storehouse of love of God and freely distributed the contents, and he didn't consider, you know, the previous qualification or disqualifications of the persons. Rather, he just, you know, gave to all, and whoever was enthusiastic to receive that mercy was especially fortunate. There's a nice story also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, also in South India, in Sri Rangam. When Lord Chaitanya was there, he stayed for 4 months in Sri Rangam during the rainy season in the home of Venkata Bhatta, who is the father of who? Gopal Bhatta Goswami. So he was regularly going to the temple for darshan, the Ranganath temple, and there were many Brahmins there, you know, reciting various mantras and so forth. Paka, South Indian, you know, Brahmanas. What's that?
Well, you mentioned that...
Oh, is it a question, is it?
Yes.
Okay, after the class. At the end, you can ask a question, okay? So, he was going... And he saw the there was one Brahmana there who was trying to recite the Bhagavad Gita, and the his pronunciation wasn't very good, and other Brahmanas were making fun of him. And then Lord Chaitanya saw that he was crying, and he said, "Why are you crying?" And he said, "Well, my spiritual master told me to recite the Bhagavad Gita every day, but I cannot read so well, I cannot pronounce the Sanskrit so well, but still I am trying to do according to his order. And when I visualize that Arjuna and Krishna, Krishna instructing Arjuna, then tears come to my eyes, I feel great joy." Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced him, he said, "You are the you're the real devotee. You have got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. You have understood the mercy of Krishna. You have understood the real purport of the Bhagavad Gita," he said. So he got a special mercy, you know, even though he didn't appear to be so qualified as the others. Or we see that in the pastime of Krishna, when Krishna and Balaram were asked by the cowherd boys to bring something to eat. They were hungry in the forest. So they went to the Yajnik Brahmanas and they asked him, "Please give us some food." And they said, "Go away, we're busy with these important rituals, worship of the various devatas. This is very important. Don't trouble us." So they went to the wives of the Brahmanas. The wives of the Brahmanas were very pleased to give them as much food as they wanted. So they got the real mercy of Krishna and Balaram. They were simple village ladies, but they had a sincere affection for the Lord. Whereas then the Yajnik Brahmanas, they realized their mistake and they were lamenting. You know, we're thinking we're very advanced. Our wives, you know, we think of them just as simple ladies. But they actually got the real mercy of Krishna. So of course all those souls are highly elevated, but still we can see that, you know, it's not always so that the person who is very much in the mode of goodness, very expert in all kinds of following rules and regulations and performing rituals and doing pious activities, isn't always the first to get real mercy of the Lord. There's a certain sincerity of heart, a certain mood of bhakti, which is more attractive to Krishna. It's okay, someone pious, it's very nice, but still that's a long way from pure Krishna consciousness. So therefore we can understand bhakti is independent. Bhakti takes hold in the heart of a particular person. Why is hard to say, but anyway, that is the causeless mercy of Bhakti Devi, ultimately the causeless mercy of the Lord. So we are having different kinds of bodies, There's a lot of similarity, obviously, but there's certain subtle differences between each person, you know, one person and the next, different kinds of natures. So we have to try to engage our propensities in the service of Krishna. Society requires persons of all the different natures, those who are inclined for religious and intellectual activity, those who are inclined for political and managerial activity, those who are inclined to business farming, those who are inclined to simple work, different trades, and assisting the other higher castes, if you like, those who are more expert in the different fields. So one has to find some work in order to maintain himself, his family, and at the same time make a valuable contribution to society, because overall there has to be that mutual interaction, mutual cooperation. But if the goal is always to serve the Lord and to develop love for the Lord, then, you know, within that framework, all the members of society can have a common goal. In order to get harmony and cooperation, we need to have a common goal. If there's no goal, then, you know, people will just do what they like or make up their own goals, and there'll be conflict. You know, Prabhupada gave the example, if you have a white sheet of paper and you have a compass, you make a point and you make a circle and another point over here, a circle, another point over there. Very soon the whole paper will have many, you know, conflicting circles, overlapping circles, and it won't look very nice, very harmonious. But if you make one point and you keep drawing concentric circles, then it creates a very harmonious picture on the paper. So in the same way Prabhupada said it, if everyone got their own goal, their own self-interest, then it will be constantly be conflict and clashing among the different members of society. But if there is one goal and everyone is cooperating to attain that goal, then there will be a harmonious effect created within the society. So therefore, you know, the Vedic literatures, although they, you know, deal a lot with pious activities and generating of good karma, still the summum bonum of the Vedic literatures is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Srimad Bhagavatam clearly points out the ultimate goal of life, the attaining of Krishna consciousness, which would prepare a person's consciousness for life in the spiritual world. Attaining Krishna consciousness means that that's the same consciousness as the liberated souls in the spiritual world. So transference to the spiritual world would normally occur automatically unless the Lord specifically wanted the devotee to stay in the material world to preach, to perform devotional service, which a pure devotee will be ready for in any case. So, and even then he will be teaching people how to prepare their consciousness to go to the spiritual world. So, therefore Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are the most important among all the Vedic literatures. They give us the final conclusion, the highest goal of life. And therefore in our sampradaya the stress is on these literatures and not in studying all the other sections of the Vedas, Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, Upasana Kanda, worship of demigods, etc. Those things are for persons who are not ready to take to Krishna consciousness, or they can be supportive. They can be supportive in Krishna consciousness, just like devotees, they sometimes might consult astrology or vastu or things like that. But we shouldn't get overly preoccupied with those things. They are secondary. You know, if you're going to have some ceremony, marriage ceremony, or hair cutting ceremony, or grain giving ceremony, or whatever, of course it's nice to choose the auspicious moment. According to astrology, if you're building a temple, nowadays, you know, generally the devotees always consult the vastu experts. I guess even when they're building the houses, they consult the vastu experts. Prabhupada never gave much importance to that. He always considered, you know, Krishna consciousness is transcendental. But he does mention that, you know, in Vedic society they consulted the astrologers, and you know, he gives some recognition to it. So devotees do utilize those sciences in their activities, but their primary focus is on chanting the holy names of Krishna and worship of the Lord. When Prabhupada installed the deities in Vrindavan, he had brahmanas come and do all kinds of rituals and yajnas. But he said after that, just to satisfy the local people, otherwise they would criticize the deities are not properly installed. But we could install a deity just by kirtan. That's sufficient. Because kirtan, it includes everything else. The Hare Krishna mantra, it includes all Vedic knowledge. Yeah? It is non-different from Krishna. It is a means of associating with Krishna. So, and it's a yuga dharma, if one associates with Krishna through chanting the holy names, then, you know, everything else is included. Just as Krishna says, sarvadharman pratyajya mamekam saranam braja humtam sarva papebhyo mukshay shami masacha. Give up all other varieties of activity, just surrender to me. In return, I will protect you from all sinful reaction, do not fear. So what does he mean, giving up all varieties of activity? Sarvadharman pratyajya, all varieties of religious activity. It means that don't be concerned with all these, you know, ritualistic activities. Just surrender to me. Just engage in devotional service and I'll protect you. So this is the primary function. The primary function is to engage in devotional service. The primary activity should be to chant the holy names of the Lord. Other, you know, motive goodnessy aspects of Vedic knowledge may be utilized in a secondary way. Always keeping the primary purpose of chanting the holy names and engaging in devotional service in the forefront. So in this way, devotees can progress in spiritual life and they can cooperate together to attain a common goal and to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Okay, any question or comment? Yes, please.
On a comment, I was thinking that I think a lot of it from yourself, actually. During Prabhupada's time, there was an old lady in Vrindavan. She was every morning during the dark, and she'd wake up early and she'd take a load of water to rub down on her. And Prabhupada said, just by doing this service, she was going back to Godhead. Just a very simple service.
Very simple service.
So, you think we have to do something major.
And of course the stories of Hanuman and the spider, right? When they were building the bridge to Lanka, and Hanuman was throwing the huge boulder and the spider was pushing some grains of sand into the sea to help to build the bridge, and Hanuman said, "Move aside, I'm doing important service here." And Lord Ram chastised him that the service of the spider is just as important, it's just as dear to me. He's serving Krishna according to his capacity.
Another thing I was thinking about as you're speaking, one of the hardest things as we try and make progress in devotional service is to find the right level of renunciation. It's one of the greatest challenges.
I think so, yeah. Well, I think just to have to be situated in a service, ashram and service, where one feels peaceful, and then to focus as much as possible simply on attentive chanting and improving the quality of one's service. That's the most important thing. Of course, you know, by maybe some trial and error in a devotee's life, but one has to be patient, and one can consult other Vaishnavas and just stick to the process through thick and thin. It was mentioned a few verses back, the importance of steadiness. Just steady execution. Try to do one's best to execute the service that one is given, and you know, Krishna should give one the intelligence to how to find the right level of renunciation. Yeah, he probably did. I don't exactly know where, but I mean, that's a famous saying anyway. Failure is the pillar of success. If we try and we fail, you know, still it gives us experience and helps us to develop our intelligence. I mean, that's not always the case. Sometimes people fail and they keep on failing. But an intelligent man, you know, he learned from his mistakes. And he listens also to the advice of others. Prabhupada is a first-class man. You know, he hears from others and he executes those instructions. He hears from the, you know, wise persons, the gurus of the shastra, and then he applies that knowledge, you know, and therefore he's very fixed in Krishna consciousness. Someone else, he hears from the authorities, he makes mistakes, but he learns from the mistakes and improves himself. But you know, they're second class. But third class, you know, he hears and he makes mistakes and he doesn't pay any heed to that. He goes on making mistakes. Well, that's not very good. But anyway, if one can learn second class at least by learning from one's mistakes, then failure is the pillar of success in that sense. Okay, I'm going to finish here because I have to depart this morning. And thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Nitai Gaur Premanandi.